This is the NCARB podcast, where you get an inside look at licensure, regulation, and the initiatives shaping the future of architectural practice. I'm your host, Andy McIntyre, Vice President of Marketing and Communications at NCARB. And this season, we're diving into Pathways to Practice, NCARB's multi-year effort to rethink how architects become licensed.
Architecture is the hardware to the software of life, right? It is fundamentally about that interaction, and it makes life easier if we have a built environment that works.
Across 8 episodes, we'll explore how licensure got to where it is today and where it needs to go next. We talk with architects, educators, regulators, and NCARB leaders about education, experience, and the exam, and why each of those pillars is evolving.
And that portion of school where you go from conceptual to real is also really challenging. It's not something you're really gently moved into. It's kind of like you're doing something that's flowy and crazy, and all of a sudden, wait, you actually have to make this work.
You'll hear how the NCARB competency standard was developed, how research is shaping future licensure models, and what a more flexible, competency-based approach could mean for candidates from a wide range of backgrounds.
So we've seen that in our data as the number of reciprocal licenses starts to decrease a little bit, but that number of individuals who are licensed holds steady.
We also tackle the big questions. Why does licensure look the way it does today? Where do candidates face the biggest barriers? And how can we expand access without lowering standards?
Not everybody fits into the same mold. And so having different pathways to licensure, I think, is really important.
Whether you're a licensure candidate, an educator, a firm leader, or a regulator, this season offers clarity, context, and transparency into one of the most important conversations facing the profession.
Does this requirement to complete all divisions of the exam place an unfair burden on any one group or other?
This is Pathways to Practice, only on the NCARB podcast. Please follow the link in the show notes, subscribe now, and join us as we explore the future of architectural licensure.
Okay, so I'll talk.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Loya would make the models of the Cranbrook campus. Perfect timing. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season, we were inspired by the number 11, which is basically a pair of ones, or exactly a pair of ones. So this season's theme is pairs or duos. We are talking about ladies who were part of a professional pair in some fashion.
As always, we are not experts, and we are just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends, having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
All right, so this week we will discuss the Saarinen family's matriarch, Loya Saarinen, textile artist, sculptor, and wife of Eliel Saarinen. I'm Jessica Rogers, celebrating National Just Because Day, based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, wishing I had some pot de creme to celebrate National Pot de Creme Day in San Francisco.
And I'm Nurjiri Rivas, celebrating wondering if I like crab soup on National Crab Soup Day in Houston, Texas.
It's a lot of national things.
Yeah, something for everybody.
All right, so our story begins in Helsinki, Finland on March 16th, 1879. Mina Carolina Matilde Louise Gesilius was born. Everybody called her Loya, a nickname from Louise. Her parents were Herman Otto Gesilius, a food importer, wholesaler, and businessman, and her mother was Emily Caroline Auguste Struckmann. Loya was number 5 of 7. I don't know the exact breakdown of, like, where Loya fit, but she got brothers and sisters, y'all.
And a really long name.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a lot to keep track of, both family-wise and name-wise. Especially if all 7 kids have that many names, you know?
Yeah, jeez. So many. All right, so actually, her parents immigrated from Germany to Finland. Loya would attend the preparatory school at the Finnish Academy of Fine Arts in Helsinki, where she studied sculpture and was introduced to weaving, textile, and clothing design. After that, she would study sculpture in Paris at the Academy Calarossi under Jean-Antoine Engelbert.
Ooh. So the Academy Colarossi was an art school in Paris founded in 1870 by an Italian sculptor named Filippo Colarossi.
And Jean-Antoine Engelbert was a highly decorated, award-winning French sculptor.
Yes. All right. So in 1903, Loya moved to Hvitrov with her brother architect Herman Gesselius. There she would work on commissions of interiors, photography, and of course, sculpture.
Oh, so her brother was an architect. Interesting that she got to work with him.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about her brother, Herman. So Herman actually had a firm called Gesselius, Lindgren, and Saarinen, which included himself, Armas Lindgren, and Eliel Saarinen.
Oh, hey!
Saarinen alert. Ah!
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. So, brief two-second history on this firm. The firm was founded in 1896. The firm gained lots of recognition in 1900 at the Paris World Expo with their design of a pavilion in the Art Nouveau style. And despite their successes, the firm was short-lived, as in 1905, the firm ended operations and the National Museum of Finland would be their last project together. Loya's brother would continue to design along with Lindgren, but in 1912, he had to step down due to an illness, and in 1916, he would pass away from a tuberculosis disease.
Oh no, that's terrible.
How sad. I'm curious to know why Eliel left the firm, though.
I know, same.
Well, I'll get to that in a little bit. So Armas Lindgren would begin his own firm, and in 1919, he would teach architecture at the Helsinki University of Technology. There, he would mold the mind of another great Finnish architect, a la Alvar Aalto.
Dang, so many names being dropped in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, this is like Finnish architect bingo.
Yeah.
Oh, we're just going to start. All right, so as you might have guessed, when Loya went to Hvitrask to join her brother, there she met Eliel. Now, the tea is that Eliel was actually married when they met to a woman named Matilde. Avi, Matilde and Eliel get divorced. Eliel marries Loya on March 6, 1904. And at some point, Matilde ends up marrying Loya's brother, Herman. Date I couldn't find.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Musical marriages over here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little weird, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, so it sounds like an amicable divorce then?
Mm-hmm. I guess. Also, so Eliel and Loya get married before he leaves the firm. My curiosity grows. You think maybe it was after Herman married his ex-wife and Eliel was like, sure, I married your sister, but you getting it on with my ex-wife, that's awkward. Later, Gator.
I just sort of assumed that Eliel wanted to do his own thing and that's why he left, but maybe it was the drama.
Maybe it was all of the above. I don't, they just brush over. It's like, why aren't we talking about this? Like, what happened?
They're like, we don't want to talk about our business.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, wow.
All right, Eliel, right? He is working with the firm, you know, that has all this musical chair marriages with the firm until 1905, like we mentioned before, when the firm dissolved. He is doing his own thing, okay? Projects, projects, projects. Marriage, babies. Loya would give birth to their daughter, Eva Lisa, who they called Pipson, on March 31st, 1905. And then 5 years later, in 1910, Loya gives birth to her son, Arrow.
I don't know why I thought Arrow was the older brother. He gave me, like, older brother vibes from how he's described, like a serious guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting. I feel like he gives me younger brother vibes, like doing what he wants, not following the rules, forging his own path kind of thing.
I guess it takes an older sister with little brothers
to know a younger brother. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I got older brother vibes too. I don't know, but I don't have younger brothers. So maybe that's what it is.
Mm-mm.
Takes one to know one. Anyway, so Elia and Loya's relationship and partnership were a true duo. I wish more of my sources mentioned her during this time, but from what I read, they constantly bounced ideas off of one another. And basically, it was described that they had the same design sensibility. As a sculptor, Loya would be the one to build all of Elia's models.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So, okay, Elia is doing the things. He becomes a city planner. He published a book about it. He advised on the city development of Budapest. He designed a series of postage stamps. All like, you know, the design of coins and banknotes. He designed it for Finland before it moved to the euro. He's just doing all the things.
How neat to apply his design sense into so many different avenues and lasting things too, like currency. If it wasn't for the euro, we would still have his money rolling around.
Yeah, that's really interesting that he worked on such a variety of project types. Also, casual designing the city of Budapest.
Right? No big deal.
Yeah. I mean, not the whole thing, but like still.
A part of it, yes.
Yeah.
All right, so he's also entering competitions, but he keeps like making it to second place, right? Just never right there, but always second place. A notable one, though, was in 1922, when Elia wins second prize for the design of the Tribune Tower in Chicago. So he lost. We never hear about the losers, but what makes this significant is that he got a lot of attention. Here is this guy who never designed a skyscraper before in a far-off land, and he wins second place.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny that you say he only got second place. I think second place is very often overlooked. I mean, second place is not like not nothing. It's something to still be very proud about.
Yeah, agreed. And like you said, Jessica, he hadn't designed that type of building before. He isn't from the States. So it's definitely still an achievement. I would not consider that a loser.
Yeah.
True. True. Yes, that is very true. I mean, but he didn't do the Tribune Tower. But anyway, it's still significant because of this recognition, he gets invited to teach at the University of Michigan. So the Saarinens moved to America in 1922.
Woo! Go blue! Michigan bound. Now they're trolls, guys.
Yeah!
Yeah. There used to be like a sound effect for trolls. Like, like rawr, I don't know. All right. So while in the States, Elia or the Saarinens meet George Booth and his wife. Together, Booth and his wife had this crazy idea to create an American version of the Bauhaus in Europe that they would call Cranbrook.
Yes. I mean, I know we're all waiting for Cranbrook to make its entrance, right? But as listeners may remember, we've talked about Cranbrook Academy on past episodes like Aline Saarinen, Ray Eames, Florence Knoll, and probably a few others, to be honest. But mm-hmm. I like that now we're getting more behind the scenes of like how it began.
Yes.
So George Gough Booth was a newspaperman turned philanthropist who believed in promoting the arts. So with his wife, Ellen, they came up with the idea for Cranbrook Academy.
Yeah. So the Cranbrook campus would consist of several schools, like the Academy of Art, a museum, an Institute of Science, and a couple of other buildings.
Yeah, I think we also mentioned that in a previous episode, but Cranbrook has six institutions when it began. Christchurch Cranbrook, Cranbrook School for Boys, Kingswood School for Girls, Brookside School, Cranbrook Institute of Science, and Cranbrook Academy of Art.
Yes. Now, I keep talking about this guy, Elio, right? Like, Elio this and Elio that and town planner. Where's Loya? Well, she's right there. Elia would become the chief architect of the Cranbrook campus, and Loya is by his side, still bouncing ideas with him. And in 1925, while still living in Ann Arbor, Loya would make the models of the Cranbrook campus.
Of course she would. I hope some of those still live for me to see them.
Ooh, yeah, that would be cool to see.
Yeah. All right. So in the fall of 1925, the Saarinen family would officially move to Cranbrook. So from what I see, Loya is making models and such. But officially, starting in 1926, Loya wasn't getting paid.
Oh,
I believe that technically she was working under her husband, and maybe that's why.
I don't like hearing this at all.
Yeah, it's not great. I would hope that, like, what he's getting paid then is collectively for both of their work. Like, it should be more, and it's for both of them. That's the only way I can see that. You know what I mean? Like, we're paying, I don't know. Even that is not great.
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. It seemed like they were only paying Eliel before this, or they, maybe it's what you said, but the check said Eliel. It didn't say Elia and Loyal. So anyway, after all of this, I say this because I see this letter from 1928 from the Cranbrook Foundation saying that Loya was going to get paid $1 an hour for her model making services.
Okay, well, that's about $17 an hour today. And back then, there wasn't such a thing as minimum wage. So that was established 10 years later. And it started at 25 cents an hour, which makes me believe that she's making an honest, good living with that $1 an hour salary.
Phew.
Yeah. Okay, so from what we know, Loya wasn't just Eliel's right hand, nor was she just a model maker. She designed the interiors for every one of Eliel's projects. She designed and collaborated with Swedish weavers to create every textile, rug, curtain, and tapestry that is seen on that campus.
She was a master interior designer, doing all the things everywhere. Amazing.
Yes. Oh, and she was the head of the weaving department. So she taught about textiles, created textiles, also started her own company that sold designs not used at Cranbrook. Her company was called Studia Loya Saarinen, that started in 1928.
Yeah, I know her as a textile designer and creator. I didn't know that she was an interior designer until today, you telling us the story. And now she's a business owner too? I'm loving this.
Yeah, I only knew her as a weaver previously as well.
Yes, this is a reminder for listeners to check out our show notes and a reminder to myself. There's a paper that I've been dying to read of someone that did research on Loya as the entrepreneur. So,
well, maybe you can bring it up during the wrap up. We can learn a few more things.
Okay, so yeah, Loya not only worked on the textiles for Cranbrook, but she did so for clients all over the country, including Frank Lloyd Wright.
Of course she did.
Shaking and baking with the big names.
Mm-hmm. Also, to add to her list, Loya is an inventor, y'all.
Oh!
Yes, so of course, her collaborators were weavers, and one in particular, her husband, also worked at Cranbrook in their woodworking department. Loya and this fella would design, create, fabricate, and patent a loom made to create some of their intricate designs. Y'all, when weavers talk about this loom today, they call it the Cadillac of looms. I wish I knew more about weaving to describe it more in depth, but you catch my drift.
Yeah, enough said.
Mm-hmm.
Cadillac of looms.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not just because they're based out of Michigan, you know what I'm saying? It's like quality. So let's talk about some of the projects that Loya worked on. Well, there are two that stood out to me. One is the Kingswood School for Girls and their own Saarinen House. Both are a part of the Cranbrook campus.
Let's do this. Let's dive in.
Yes. So I mentioned before Loya's children, Arrow and Pipson. By now, they are adults and designers and all that jazz. This episode, y'all, could really have been like a whole family affair, like just talking about the Saarinen family. Because the reason why I wanted to talk about Kingswood as a project to highlight is because this school, like I mentioned, it's a family affair. Top dog, Elia, designed the building and the entrance gates. Protege son, Arrow, designed the furniture. Daughter Pipson worked on the interior spaces and selected the interior colors and decor. And then we have Mama Loya. She did everything else. She was the PM, making sure that the ish got done. Plus, of course, she did all of the textiles, rugs, curtains, and tapestries.
Okay, I need pictures. ASAP.
Right? I love that they were all involved in the project and they each kind of had like their niche and their role to like take over.
For sure. Family affair. All right. So the second project that I want to briefly talk about too is their own home located on the Cranbrook campus. Again, like Kingswood, it's a family affair. everyone contributed to the design of it. This house was the social house because this house would serve as the house where the presidents of Cranbrook would stay. And at one point, Eliel was president, and the Serena family would actually live in this house in the 1930s. I believe this is the home that made appearances in, like, all of our previous ladies' stories, like Florence, Charles and Ray Eames.
Yeah, I remember talking about it during Florence Knowles' episode, especially because she was an orphan and became sort of, like, pseudo-adopted into the Sarandon family. Like, she spent a lot of time with them at this house while she was studying at Cranbrook.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the house, it's so sweet. This house was everything. It became the place for the social events for the school. It became the family home where Loya would host all of these family gatherings.
That is so, so, so cool.
Yes. So a lot of this information I found by watching this documentary provided by the Cranbrook Institute called Room for a Lady, Loya Saarinen at Cranbrook. And it was actually released in 2022.
Oh, I love that they're featuring her.
Neat. How'd you find it? Where is it?
You know, just a simple Google on Loya's life, and then the documentary pops up. But if I remember my research, I sometimes don't want written research. I want it, like, in media form. So I probably put, like, media, and then that came up. But you'll find it in our show notes because that was a really good source for me. But what I loved about this documentary is that, of course, great research and resources, but you can also see Loya's work, her attention to detail, and how her designs were integrated into the rest of the spaces.
Okay, I gotta see this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. It's a great documentary that really exposes Loya's contributions and the efforts that the foundation is making to restore her work. Oh, and another fun fact. We can add a landscape gardener to Loya's resume because at the Saarinen house, Loya designed the landscape around that house, and she also designed the landscape surrounding the Triton pools in front of Cranbrook Art Museum. I don't know. She reminded me of Beatrix Ferran. Like, Loya would oversee the planting of hundreds of thousands of annuals, aka flowers, around the Cranbrook campus.
Okay, what don't this lady do?
Yeah, no kidding. That's wild. I had no idea she was designing the campus grounds.
Mm-hmm. All right, so back to Loya and Cranbrook. In 1939, there was a shakeup at Cranbrook. They had started to restructure the different departments. The weaving department, gone. Or maybe it was just Loya's position that was gone. So who is they? Not sure, but considering that Eliel, her husband, was still president, my guess is that these changes that were happening were coming from above them.
Whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, that sounds like a real shakeup. But that's odd that Eliel was still president when it's all happening. Like you said, it sounds like it was, like, up the food chain. Because shouldn't he have a say in that as president?
Total blindside. So Loya writes a letter to the board expressing her disappointment. Of course. But it's just said, like, the Saarinens basically made the Cranbrook campus. And then, well, anyway, after this hoopla in 1942, Eliel was stepped down as president. Eliel had served as president for 14 years.
Yeah, this is some crap. Glad that Eliel stood by Loya's side.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. So fortunately for Loya, she still had her studio and she still was commissioned to do some work here and there. She had her sculptures. Her studio would sell the furniture pieces that her son created and other friends that she knew. She'd just sell their stuff.
Okay, so she's not unemployed and she can continue to make an honestly good living all on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad that she had her own business on the side so that she could keep working, right?
Yes. So, in 1950, Eliel would pass away. Loya would move into a house that was designed by her son, Arrow. And then Loya, I guess, was somewhat retired. Yeah, I mean, she was in her artist bag, okay? She is working on her sculptures, keeping busy.
Oh, still, that must have been difficult for Loya. They were such a power couple.
Yeah. So, in 1968, Loya would pass away. In 1978, the New York Times wrote an article talking about her work. And in the 80s, the restoration of her work began. In 1994, the Saarinen House that I mentioned became a museum. The documentary that I referenced, it was used to fundraise money for further restoration of her work. I also liked that they included her grandchildren in this documentary, and they talk about the memories that they had playing at the Saarinen House.
That is so lovely. I heard in there that we can add the Saarinen Museum to our ArcVenture list.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was a museum when we went and visited, Jessica. Too bad we didn't get to go through it.
Yeah, we did visit it, but we'll have to visit it again.
Exactly.
All right, so now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. So without further ado, drum roll, please. Estelle Bailey Babenstein.
Estelle.
Yeah. All right. So Estelle is half Ghanaian, born and raised in the UK, holds a BA in fashion from Central St. Martin's, and now she is based in New York, where she has her firm called Dream Awake, which is a full-service interior architecture and experiential design studio.
Okay, this already sounds amazing.
Agreed. I'm loving this.
Yeah. So what I like about Estelle, besides the fact that she just seems really cool, is that she does so many designy things. I mentioned her interior design firm that was started with a Tumblr page, by the way. But she also has a clothing brand named Noah that was originally started with her husband, but was relaunched in 2015 as a joint partnership.
That's so cool. I can see the connection with Loya, not only through the partnership with her husband, but also the work in textiles and the variety of different project types she's doing. A Jill of all trades, like our girl Loya was.
Mm-hmm. A true collaboration between wifey and hubby. Hubby does the clothes and Estelle creates the spatial experiences of the brand's retail spaces.
Ooh, I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. Like to see this power couple caryatid. Perhaps we should put this spatial experience in our ArcVentures list too.
All right. Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid along with our banter and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, your neighbors, your family, tell them all. Tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website at shebuildspodcast.com/donate, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com.
We are excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website, shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X, formerly known as Twitter, at shebuildspod. Until then,
see ya!
Bye!
Adios!
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.